You're listening to a special edition of the Roundtable Podcast, the NaNoWriMo Project, part one of four. Hello, friends. I'm Dave Robison.
And this is Jared Axelrod.
And you're listening to part one of a very special edition of the Roundtable Podcast, the NaNoWriMo Project.
Dave and I are sitting down with four very talented Inspire writers who, like many such pen wielders and keyboard pounders all over the globe, are preparing to gauge that time-honored tradition known only to the brave and the bold, cranking out no less than 50,000 words between November 1st and November 30th.
Indeed. And what we're going to do tonight is we're going to discuss their individual preparations for the task ahead and conduct little mini workshops for each and every one of their stories. Now, once NaNoWriMo is underway, Jared and I are going to touch base with each of them individually, getting progress reports and urging them on to word count victory. And then we'll all gather back again afterwards, like sometime early December, and do a post-mortem and see what worked and what didn't work and see what they'll be doing differently next year. And Jared, thank you so much, man, for joining me for this. This is a real pleasure.
Oh, it's great. I am a huge fan of NaNoWriMo. I've done it three times myself.
I was going to ask. This does not surprise me.
It's such a great thing and a wonderful way to get people started writing on novels, get people finishing their novels, and just getting people to get in the habit of writing. And I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, we've heard many, many guest writers on the show have come on, and when we asked them how they get started writing, inevitably, NaNoWriMo was the catalyst, the spark that showed them, holy crap, I can do this, and launched them into a career of madness and delirium, which is awesome.
Well, I think career is being really strong.
That might be a bit of an overstatement. Who knows? Who knows? We're hoping for the best.
Indeed. So,
Jared, before we get into this, Jared, I have to ask you. Dear friends, if you're not familiar with Master Axelrod, you should definitely go out and check his episode where he was guest host and the 20 Minutes With segment. The interview with him was sterling. And I also wanted to ask, how are things with The Battle of Blood and Ink, available to all fine stores and e-outlets?
Things are great. I've been seeing it float around when people go to conventions. I have a wonderful group of online friends who have been keeping me abreast of its appearances all over the country, which has been mind-blowing. It was seen at New York Comic Con a couple weeks ago, which was great. And just, it's wonderful. It's been going good. The audience response has been very strong. People have been digging it. I've been digging. People have been digging it. It's been great.
Have you noticed an increase in traffic at Fables of the Flying City?
Slowly but surely. Yes, definitely. We're getting a lot of people who were clearly not aware of the podcast and who saw the link in the back of the book and now are listening and becoming fans and new. So excellent. That's really awesome.
Outstanding. Outstanding. That's cool. Well, we wish you every success with that bold triumph, sir. May it continue to grow and thrive in the literary world.
Thank you very much.
Indeed. Well, let's introduce our four guests here at the round table. I actually had to put the insert in the middle of the round table, so now it's more like the big oval table because
we're the oblong table.
The oblong table. We're not used to having this many people sitting at the table. First of all, to my right, we have the newlywed Christopher Morse, actor, writer, evil genius behind the Supervillain Corner podcast. So glad you could join us, Chris.
Thank you very much for having me back. And yeah, I add husband to that list of achievements.
And no small task indeed. No, and the epic tale of Chris's wedding and the events leading up to that wedding, I hope are ultimately going to be novelized at some point.
One can only hope, and one can only hope that the video of the bachelor party will eventually make it online. And this, you laugh, but seriously, if J.R. Blackwell happens to edit that down, you will see an epic party of epicness.
She will.
It's on the list, man.
All right.
No pressure.
October's a busy month. You're lucky you got any bachelor party.
Here we go. Okay, moving on. next to him, next to Master Morse, we have Veronica Giguere, writer of many genres and voice actress extraordinaire. And thank you, Veronica, for joining us. And I am so glad that your throat has cast off the vile virus that threatened to keep you from our company, dear lady.
Me too. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you sound fabulous. Are things well for you, ma'am?
Things are busy but good, as I like to say.
Ah, so, excellent.
In the middle of starting the sixth season of The Secret World Chronicle, and
woohoo!
Yeah, big woo.
I know more. And gosh, what else? Still trudging along with H.G. World and The Diary of Jill Woodbine with Jay Smith, and there may be a sequel to The Ballad of Iron Percy that I may or may not be beginning to record in January.
You sound like a politician.
I'll tell you about my five-point plan.
I did not have a recording session with that man.
Well, and let me just interject this in now, dear friends. We're going to make sure that all of this awesomeness, the links to all of the things, all of these amazing people are referencing, are going to be firmly highlighted in the liner notes. So if you're wondering about the Ballad of Iron Percy or the Secret World Project or Fables of the Flying City or all of the wonderful things, you will find it there. So, Veronica, thank you so much. I'm glad you could join us.
Thank you.
Beside Veronica, I am most pleased to present Starla Hutchton, a writer and graphic artist whose illustrative awesomeness has adorned the covers of many a novel. She is the author of The Dreamer's Thread, which many of you have either read or heard, and if you haven't, get on that, because it's charming and delightful. Thanks for joining us, Starla.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Yes, and illustrative awesomeness, that's yours, babe. You can put that on your business card.
I'll add it to mellifluous that somebody else called me
Ooh,
once.
God, great word. That's awesome.
I have to get a plaque at this point.
I know. I just keep adding to the list.
A big long one. Yeah, with those little chains with little brass plates that just keep hanging on. Yeah, awesome. And rounding out our NaNoWriMo troupe is John Miro, rhymes with hero, friends, author of Subversion, Enemy Lines, and editor and contributor to Walk the Fire and many other literary works, all available for your purchase and enjoyment. John, thank you, sir, for adding your voice to the conversation.
Yeah, well, the check passed, so.
God, you know, I'm going broke having you on the round table, dude.
Your
money goes to me eventually. Yeah. So.
All dollars lead to Starla, indeed. All right, my friends, let's get into this because this is going to be a grand round table experience. We're going to go around the table. We're going to ask everybody one at a time to share your strategies and your preparations, if you have any, for achieving this 50,000 word count, which is the goal of NaNoWriMo. And then we'll ask you to share your story with us, and we're going to get down, and we're all going to get down and do some serious workshopping action on it. So I would like to start with Mr. Chris Morse, if that's all right with you, sir.
Oh, no.
Oh, you're up, dude. The spotlight shines on you. So, Chris, yes. Have you done NaNoWriMo before?
I have not done NaNoWriMo before.
Really? NaNoWriMo?
Oh,
virgin.
You're in for a treat.
I am. I however, yes. But I did do Script Frenzy before it sort of was removed from the rotation as a thing. For those of you who don't know, Script Frenzy was the play version or screenplay version of NaNoWriMo. And I think it was a much easier version of NaNoWriMo because it's only 100 pages as opposed to 50,000 words. And that comes out to like maybe 16,000 words because a play is much easier than a book, in my humble opinion.
That would be why it's easier. It's less words.
Yes.
So have you done any prep? Have you done research? Have you been like holding down people that have done NaNoWriMo and beat them for their secrets?
We've been chatting about it.
We have been talking about it. Okay. But my key prep that I do is to be completely overbooked for the month of November. I think that
Great.
Really
How
really
many
helps.
Plays are you doing in November?
Two. I'll be acting in two plays
Holy
in the month
crap.
Of November.
Dude, I think you're missing the point here.
Yeah. It wasn't planned. I wasn't getting any because I do.
I beg your pardon?
Mm-hmm.
You weren't getting any?
He accidentally auditioned for these. He just tripped. Oh. And there he was at the theater. And then as I think we all do, when he trips, he just lets loose a Shakespearean soliloquy. And and he accidentally got a part.
Bastard. I think it was Bruce Willis who once, you know, caustically complained to his best friend, "So what, you accidentally slipped in the kitchen and your parts fell into my wife and you're having an affair? How does that happen?"
I take responsibility. I'll be acting in two plays and attempting to write 50,000 words at the same time. I don't see any problem with that.
Nah. If you want to get something done, ask a busy person to do it. That's what you're doing.
True enough.
It was a short marriage.
Is your wife on board, Chris? Is she saying, yeah, let's do this thing?
My wife.
She's super busy this month too, right?
She is. Well, she's incredibly encouraging. She's the most encouraging person I know, which is a shock because I'm a bum. But she's so encouraging of everything I've done. She was encouraging of Supervillain Corner, my podcast. She was encouraging of me writing the piece that I pitched on the roundtable when I was on. And she's encouraging of this. It helps the fact that she has a massively busy month of November in which she will be working till 7 o'clock, if not later, every night, saving young mutant babies at the hospital. While she does that, I will be at home writing. But she is fantastic, wonderful. I will give any other superlatives to describe her, and she's totally behind me writing this. So I will be doing that in addition to rehearsing for shows.
So tip number one, have a supportive spouse.
Yes.
Boom.
Without a doubt.
It's totally true. You can't ever underestimate what it means that your family understands, doesn't just know you're doing it, but understands what it means to you and what the commitment is. And that means squirreling away minutes and sometimes literally, all right, I will get the kids in the car, you go write for 10 minutes.
That's awesome. So Chris, are you concerned that between rehearsals and day job and other things that you're not going to be able to find the time?
A year ago, I would have been, but I think I've learned a lot in that past year, and some of it was from listening to this podcast, but some of it was from listening to people like Jared Axelrod, who have given me bits of advice like completion is better than perfection, which is a bit of
advice. Especially with NaNoWriMo.
Right, and so I am going to write as many words as I can every single day. And some days that'll be more or less than others, but I will write those words and I don't care if they're crap.
There you go.
It's the right attitude. That's the right attitude.
Completion is better than perfection. There's rule number two. Awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, Chris, can you share your story with us so we can all kind of dive in and take toothy little bites out of it and see what it tastes like?
Oh, already. Okay. Here we go.
Yeah. Bring it.
All right. It is called tentatively the Jackdaw's Nest, and it is it's part Harry Potter, part One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and part The Vain Jackdaw by Aesop. And for those who don't know, it's one of Aesop's fables, and it's basically Jupiter was going to declare the king of all birds, and so all the birds start perfecting themselves and making themselves pretty, and the jackdaw, who's basically a raven, goes around and steals all their plumage and puts it on himself so he looks fabulous, and he's about to be declared the king of all birds when all the birds will go, hey, wait a second, that's ours, and they steal it off of him, and he's just the plain black jackdaw, and he doesn't have any nice plumage. So that's the where sort of the seed of my idea came from. And my
I can see how you would build a novel out of that, clearly.
Oh, clearly. But my idea is it focuses around a character named Glory Beam. Gloria Violet Beam is her full name, Glory for short. She's our protagonist. She lives in this world that is very similar to ours, except everybody or nearly everyone can do magic of a sort. This is a magic of a sort of a mental type of magic in that they pull their power from nature and they're able to focus it using their minds. The problem is that Gloria has been brought to a basically a mental institution where all these other young people who have mental disorders of different kinds. She has an extreme form of, she goes to extremes, so a manic depressive sort of thing. Her highs are very high, her lows are very low. That's a problem when you have access to magic that is controlled by your emotions and your thought process. So she is responsible. She has killed her family. Basically, she had a fit at her house. and she killed the people that she lived with, that she loved, her parents. So she's been put into this institution with these other people who have similar issues. The place is called the Divine Lorraine Institute. It is warded so that they can't pull upon magic, and so they're just being sort of dealt with as these unfortunate young people with mental problems. As she gets used to her sort of confinement, she meets some other characters, one of which is Praga. Praga is actually, she's not a young woman, she is a golem. Or a golem, rather. She has been created by an evil magic user in that world, but he was taken out, and she is stuck as existing. She has, you know, she's huge, she's 6'7", she's over 300 pounds, but she has the essential mind of a young woman, but she's very simple, and she's very suggestive, she's very naive, and they don't know what to do with her, so they put her in here. And then she has several other characters. There's Benny, who is basically the super shy introvert. There's Kofi, who has a Fregoli delusion, who basically believes that everyone's actually not themselves. They're an imposter of themselves. There's a character, Nevaeh, who has hallucinations, and she's constantly imbalanced, and so on. So we meet these sort of cast of characters. The person in charge of the entire institute is a guy by the name of Dr. Jack Crowell, and he has several nurses under him, including Nurse Russell. Gloria, as she lives there, she starts to find that some of the inmates seem to be getting worse, and some of them are disappearing, and she can't really understand why that's happening, and she's worried. She's paranoid. She starts to believe that maybe she's not really supposed to be here. She doesn't feel like she's having these extremes, although she is taking her medication. As it goes on, they believe that one of the nurses is harming the other inmates, the other children, and they go to stop them, and eventually, obviously I've outlined this and I didn't prepare as well as I should have, but
what are you talking about? This is very impressive.
Oh, thank you. Basically, eventually it is revealed that one of the adults is draining the children of their powers. They find that they have immense powers, and during their sort of therapy sessions, they are draining them of their magic and using them for their own. They're being the jackdaw equivalent, basically. They're taking the plumage of these young people because nobody cares, because their parents are dead, their families are dead, no one's going to notice. And Glory finds that out, and she sort of leads a rebellion against them. And that's kind of where I am.
Bam! There we go. Awesome. Well, let's take a round table, turn around the table, and everybody, quick initial thoughts and one question of clarification, and hopefully by the time we go around the whole table, we'll have all the questions and all the initial thoughts out. Veronica, we'll start with you. What first impressions of Chris's idea and a question of clarification that you're not sure about?
I like it. And the notes make sense. I mean, I'm going to be nerdy and type out everything so I can follow because I have goldfish memory. But it follows and it makes sense, and I like it. My one question would be, how are you going to tie your title in with something in the story? Because, granted, I ain't all that smart, and I didn't really get the jackdaw reference.
Right.
Because I'm not. So how do you plan to tie that in, either visually or some cute naming thing? Or how?
Sorry. Well, there's a couple ideas that I had. One was starting the piece with the text of Aesop's fable of the vain jackdaw and sort of letting it flow from there, letting the reader sort of make the connections themselves. The other thing is, by calling it the Jackdaw's Nest, I'm trying to make sort of a connection to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And I don't want to call it One Flew Over the Jackdaw's Nest, although I suppose I could. And again, this is a sort of a tentative title, so maybe the title will be changed as I go on and as I write. But this is just sort of where it is in my head, not necessarily where it's going to be when it finishes, if that makes sense.
Now, cool. You could also do something like, you know, usually these institutions have some sort of logo or crest or something like that.
Right.
Maybe find some kind of a bird to tie it in with.
Okay, that would make sense.
Yeah. And it's been years since I read One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, so I don't remember how Ken Kesey tied that in, the title in with the book. So
I don't think
maybe
it was
you could play off of that.
In One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, I think it was just that they were cuckoo because they were crazy.
Okay.
I think it's an old newspaper.
Jack Nicholson flew out. But yeah,
no,
I think
no. Graham Greene got all hulked out through a chair, table through a window, and he's the one who escaped.
Right.
Anyway.
That's not the book we're talking about.
Starla, what other first impressions did you have and questions for Chris?
Well, I like it, but I guess my only question would be, what is the target audience for this? Like, is it actually meant to be YA, or is it more like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is an adult book?
I think it would be probably an old, I don't even know if there's a term for this, but older YA. So like an urban fantasy that brushes the very top of the YA audience and sort of the bottom. It's hard because so many books.
So that would be like new adult, this thing. That
new adult, is that what it's called?
Yeah. Okay.
Seriously, we have another subgenre? Holy crap.
I know. And this, I've kind of been paying attention to this because it's kind of where the Dreamers thread falls. So when I first saw this, I was like, oh, okay. It's only been within like maybe the last year and a half, I think, 2 years maybe, that I first heard of this subgenre.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this is just people needing to put things in smaller and smaller boxes. But yeah, so I think that would be, what is the exact age of your character? Because usually that kind of defines where
good
it goes.
Good.
I generally want all of them under 16 years old.
Okay.
That would definitely put it in YA category, right. But... yeah, like the Magicians by Lev Grossman, those kids are all like high school age, but I definitely would not consider that a YA book.
Right.
If anybody's read it, they would know that the content is a little more adult, and I don't know that I would want my high schooler reading it, but you know.
And I have some dark ideas, and it depends in the writing how dark I decide to go, because I have things outlined, obviously, but how much you describe things, how much you go into certain things will determine how exactly dark it goes, and so that may change depending on...
you're not going to know that till you finish it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excellent. John, first thoughts and a question?
Well, I'll see if I can redeem myself from that silly One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest digression. However, I really want to see a post-pubescent Gollum go to town inside Nurse Ratched's home.
Oh, hell yeah. Who wouldn't?
My first question, I guess, would be, I agree that you should just let the story flow from those quicksilver fingertips and see where it takes you, because it's nano and you got to flow with the improvisational skills for it. Do you find this to be a hopeful book or a cautionary tale?
I think it's going to be more of a cautionary tale, and the reason for that, as it is currently planned, it's going to have sort of a darker ending in that they will defeat the Jackdaw character, but they will find that she has been institutionalized, or my main character Gloria has been institutionalized for a valid reason. And so it's sort of that cautionary tale of, yes, you can sort of overcome certain things, but the world isn't perfect, and sometimes you are, you know, put in situations because you have to be in those situations.
Can I ask a follow-up question to the person at the podium?
Yes, of course.
does this mean that she's going to come to the realization that she's got some problems to work out, or she's trapped and it's hopeless?
It's not hopeless. But she comes to the realization, I think what's going to happen is she is going to believe that she doesn't have any problems. And then by the end of it, she'll realize she does have problems and she needs to work them out.
Oh, man, that's realist. That's not cautionary. That's great. Perfect.
Oh, that's realist. Like, okay, cool.
That's sucker punch, baby.
I tried so hard not to go there.
Aw, damn it.
Very cool. Jared, thoughts and question?
I think it's a great concept. You have a lot of characters there. You have a very clear setting. So that's going to be really helpful in trying to get those 7 pages a day out. Mm. So if you're ever stuck, you can always wander down the hallways to another person's room for a little while, see what's going on down there. So that's brilliant, whether you intended to have that safety net or not. You
totally,
totally did. Yeah. Well, good job. my question would be, is you start your character out as a murderer, which is a difficult thing to gain audience sympathy with.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a plan for that, or are you just going to do your best and hope that people like her anyway?
I'm playing around with it. I mean, Murderer is hard because it's not, she had an episode, and I think it would make it as clear as possible that she was not in control of herself when it happened, which is why she's in an institute and not incarcerated. And I think the sympathy may come with the her self-delusion from the beginning that she's not there. She's been tricked, that she's been stolen, that she's been kidnapped and brought there because she happened to have a lot of power, not because she's actually done anything. And
is she aware that she killed her parents in the beginning, or does the delusion go so deep that she's not even registering
She doesn't remember, but she's told relatively early on. And I think the fact that she doesn't remember it is part of the reason that she is so against it and she's so easily self-deluded.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
This is slightly reminiscent of the American McGee's Alice games, if you guys know of those plots at all.
I do not.
Yeah. Oh, they're great.
Yeah. They're pretty fan. I mean, the music is, well, it's a part of my writing playlist, is the music from
Nice.
But definitely check out those two games. Like, you can just, like, read the little story synopsises and view little videos and stuff online. You don't actually have to play the whole game and all that. But it's a really interesting... Yeah, it's a really interesting take on the whole Alice in Wonderland thing. She's institutionalized. She has all the survivor's guilt, and she's pretty mentally messed up. But it's a really interesting take on that, and I think it relates a little bit to that whole, you know, she's been going through this, you know, stuff, and the electroshock therapy, you know, it gets really, really dark. And
so, Chris, you got nine days, dude. read those in 9 days so you can be informed. That's very cool. And it's an important thing to note that NaNoWriMo is not the end. It's 50,000 words. But these kind of feedback, this kind of input is invaluable for the continuation and the full fleshing out. So thank you, Strada. That's very cool.
Oh, thank you.
For myself, oh God, so rich, so much rich food. I'm not liking it as a YA personally. I like the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest tale perspective much more, just in terms of what you can do. I have two questions, because it's my show. One, have you done, I mean, you've got some fabulous mental disorders that you're rocking here. How much research have you done into how these things present in the real world?
I've done a moderate amount of research. I wouldn't say that I've gone into depth. I've gone, I've gone down the Wikipedia hole. I have gone to different in like YouTube videos and that sort of thing. So it's not massive in depth research. And I'm uncertain how much will be actual and how much will be a fantasized version of these issues that I'm going to be exploring. I'm going to keep doing, I have 9 days, like you said, but I'm going to keep doing research because it's gold. But at the same time, like I don't think there's a type of that, the condition that Glory has in the book or that I'm going to write, I don't think there's an actual real version of that. I mean, it's basically an amped up version of what actually exists. So yes, I am doing research, but I'm also futzing with stuff too.
A little artistic license, because there's magic involved, and you can fuck with shit with magic. Absolutely. Yes.
And especially for this with NaNoWriMo, where you're going to be writing so fast and you're going to have to do so much editing anyway and so much more fleshing out. I think it's fine to go in without doing the research, and because this is your zero draft. This isn't even draft one.
Yeah, really.
So, to kind of go in there with a vague idea is perhaps best. And then later, when you look at it again, to be like, oh, well, I thought this was this disorder, but now that I've written it out, it's really more antisocial personality disorder. Right. So I'm going to put those details in. And I think that will serve you really well, is just to have that vagueness.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep. And the other question, and Chris, this might be something we just put out to the group, is one really quick question. The adult who's siphoning the power, is he one of the administrators or is he one of the patients?
He's one of the administrators.
Okay. And why does he want the power? What is his motivation?
Because it's power.
No, no.
It's an addiction. I think it works the same way.
Ah.
I mean, literally, he did it by accident first, because when he has spoiler alert, the Jackdaw is Dr. Jack Crowell. They don't believe it's him at first, but it's revealed as it's basically the administrator of the whole place. He gives these people therapy sessions. The entire hospital is warded, but the hospital where they do their therapy is not as heavily warded. And the first time it happened, he basically was siphoning off these powers of this person by accident, and he started to like it, and he started to do it not voluntarily, and then he realized that he had it and it was making him feel very good, and he kept doing it.
Okay, now I just came up with this. We're going to go around and throw it one more time, and we're going to do a what if. We're just going to throw a what if at Chris just to get the creative juices flowing. Here's my what if.
Mm-hmm.
What if the bad things that are happening are because no one mortal being is supposed to hold all the power that this guy has, and probably this guy is probably crazier than all of the other characters combined. And by drawing in all of this power, he's creating a crack in the universe that literally is making the universe go mad, localized within this sanitarium. And so all of these people are having to deal with these visions and delusions that are real or not. And so their own madness is being exasperated. It'd be a nice progression, because everybody's saying, oh no, it's just you, you're crazy. And then somebody else confirms it. It's like, oh my God, now what's going on? Boom. And then you finally get to the final, you get the guy, and now we have to stop him because the world is cracking. And maybe when they stop the guy, the world is still cracking, and now the crazy people have to fix the world, stop the world from going crazy. That's my thought. Who else has a what if?
I got a what if.
You got a what if, John?
Okay, so it's Magical Sucker Punch. That's what Dave wants to write. That's cool. It actually works. What I like, how about the Jack is Jekyll? He doesn't know that he's doing it because the magic is so great. It's cracked him, like the Liberty Bell. And one part of him knows what's going on and is trying it desperately to do it, and it's hiding it from the rest of him, who really wants to help you. And so at one point, you almost get away with his help, and then he turns around and goes, but.
Bum, 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 bum. Big nice. Reveal. Nice. I like that. I like that. That's got some nice character byplay, because there'll be this mysterious shadowy figure that no one can nail down, and it turns out to be him. Oh, my God.
And he's the one that's surprised more than anyone.
Exactly. Exactly. Guys, that's kind of like, help me here, Fight Club. Fight Club meets Sucker Punch. Yes, awesome.
If you
as a resident of Philadelphia, I want to say I take umbrage with you implying that the Liberty Bell is some psychotic monster. It has not been a problem since 1982. It's been done. Let's let that pass.
Okay.
I'm glad to know I will visit your great town once again.
And undo the magic that binds the Liberty Bell from its madness and let it out once again. Anyway, what else? Anybody else got a what if?
I got a what if.
What do you got?
Well, what if instead of this harming people, what if this siphoning off of this magic actually kind of fixes the crazy?
Ooh.
So then what do you do? You've got this one guy nice. With all these massive amounts of power. But it's actually doing some good. But, you know, this guy is absorbing all this magic and all this crazy. So then you've got one big ball of crazy. So, you know, is it better to have the one that may not be able to be contained? Or is it better to have, you know, all these multiple people that are miserable and, you know, crazy? Or...
That's yeah. awesome, because that would explain why this sanitarium is so highly regarded, because it has such a high success rate of curing people, because they're drawing out the crazy and storing it in vats.
Maybe occasionally he goes a little too far and oops, I took out all of your magic and now you're dead.
Yes. Yes. Tell him about the Twinkie. That's right. Cool. Cool. Veronica, are any what ifs percolating in your mind?
I do have one. Yes, you mentioned yes. your golem.
Yes.
What if she is, I guess, kind of like the like a neutralizer? Maybe, you know, if you're if she's kept off someplace, but as she's in proximity, sure, she can siphon stuff off, but it kind of bleeds in and is absorbed like some big rock sponge, and it just doesn't get out, so it goes in and dissipates. So she can create kind of a dead zone. So nice. maybe she's the ultimate good in
the
there.
Walking, to talking, the dampening field.
Exactly.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, that's got legs.
Ooh.
Jared, what about you, sir?
I have one clarifying question before I get to my what if. Yes, what sir. Does your protagonist want? Does she want to leave? Does she want, like, what is her goal in this book?
She wants to escape the Institute.
She wants to escape the Institute.
She wants to go back to the family. What she assumes it's still there.
She has an opportunity to escape, but that means that her friends, which she has now made, have to stay.
Ooh.
And suffer, like, under the shadow.
What if she figures out all of this is going on, and then right at that moment, she gets what she wants, which is to leave, to be with perhaps a new family, who knows?
Mm.
As a consequence, that means that
she has to leave them behind.
To leave mine, and the Institute is still there. It's not going anywhere.
Thus securing her role as a true protagonist, making the sacrifice, I will not escape, I will help my friends.
Yeah.
Nice. Very nice. This, awesome. Chris, you got some good mojo to work with there?
Yes, I do.
You've been listening to part one of this four-part NaNoWriMo podcast. Thank you to all our participants, Veronica Giguere, Starla Hutchton, John Miro, and Christopher Morse, for bringing their creative insights to the table and supporting each other in the preparation for the challenges of NaNoWriMo. And special thanks to Jared Axelrod for co-hosting this unique podcast experience. To all our guests, and to everyone out there participating in NaNoWriMo, we wish you every success in achieving your goals and bringing your unique stories to life. The dialogue and brainstorming continues in part two of the NaNoWriMo project. Thanks for tuning in.